It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
I am. And I'm talking about cruising. Just, you know, another call or two here, and then we're going to move on. We're going to go from cruising to fish. We can do anything on this program. It's my show. I can do what I want, right? Frank, you're on KMJ. What's up?
Oh, going cruising, you know, when you're going fishing. Anyhow, I just want to say that, you know, cruising is kind of a loose term because when you get into an old car, even if you're going to a store just to do an errand, it's cruising to me. So,
oh, sure.
What are they talking about, you know?
Well, I think that's where communities get mixed up. Cruising and sideshows and, you know, street racing, they all see it as one and the same, and it's not. It's not, because it's exactly what you're saying. Go down to the store, you know, in your street rod to get a loaf of bread. That's I would consider that cruising to a certain degree. So that's why there needs to be, and thank you, sir, for waiting. That's why there needs to be some clarification as to what it is. And I think the unraveling of these laws that allow cities to ban cruising will force a definition onto cruising, so we can definitely, you know, discern, you know, what it is that could be offensive to, you know, the long arm of the law, I guess we'll put it that way. You know, so it's, yeah, and they should certainly know the difference between cruising and street racing. I mean, that's an easy one. Tony, what's up? Hi.
Hello. Yes. Yeah, I'm calling about the cruising deal also.
Yeah.
About, like, a lot of the Central Valley cities still have cruise nights and stuff like that, that basically are, whether they're fundraisers for certain associations or whatever, but, and then I think a couple of guys behind or before me said that they take a little shot before they go home or two. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I think the biggest thing is that they're taking the opportunity, the police officers or the cities are taking the opportunity to take the car or two over and then cite them for whatever, for a fix a ticket. You know, it's just basically money thing. You know what I mean? Otherwise, there's still guys that go up and down the road here and there and then from the cruise nights and or car shows. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Yeah. Course.
I don't think it's lacked a lot. It's mostly just, a different name nowadays. You know what I mean?
But you bring up a good point, you know, and this is something I used to be involved in with cruises that I would participate in. They would do a lot of charity work, you know, give their monies to 501c3s, raise a couple of bucks for, just about anything, you know, that needed help. Cruising was a good way to do that. Tony, thank you. All right, moving right along. For years on this program, we have talked about water. We've talked about salmon. We've talked about all kinds of things related to all of the above. And as we begin to dig out from a lot of major storms, just since December, the major reservoirs in the states are filled, you know, I mean, within 86 to 104% of their historical, you know, capacity, an average for the date. The Sierra snowpack sits at 205% of normal.
Yeah.
And with additional precipitation, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more likely before the end of the California rainy season. You know, massive projected snowmelt poised to cascade downstream later this spring. It's going to be a very big deal. And the water managers are always trying to figure out right now what we're going to do with this water. But with the water comes the fish, the salmon. And we've always talked about a myriad of different reasons as to why the salmon population is on the decline. You know, water management in California revolves around several distinct priorities that are often, I would have to say, in conflict. Reservoirs provide flood control and store water for delivery via aqueducts to farms and cities. Most important, farms. But they've also disrupted the natural flow of the rivers that they span. As a result of, you know, these in-stream dams, the aquatic environment sometimes is, you know, altered. And California water managers now have to balance the water requirements for food and people against the need to preserve, you know, the viable habitat for aquatic species. I mean, we've talked about this a lot on this program. So for years, we've had controversy flare over just how much water should be released to preserve endangered species of fish and how much should be reserved for farm irrigation, you know, and urban water agencies. One of the most critically endangered species of fish is a native salmon. And this species of fish was once so abundant that hundreds of millions would hatch from eggs in the headwaters of California's rivers and they would fight their way up the ocean, you know, and then after a few years, they return as adults by the millions to fight their way back to the spawning grounds. Sounds like a Disney movie, doesn't it? And today, many of those spawning beds in California's upper watersheds are blocked by dams, you know, for a specific need. Now, while some of the streams remain unobstructed, and the fish hatcheries, you know, raise millions of fingerlings for release downstream each year, the California salmon population is a fraction of what it used to be. It is. And there's concern that the fish could disappear altogether from California's rivers. But I don't think that's going to be the case. But there are a lot of people that beat that drum. So maintaining a hospitable environment for salmon doesn't, you know, merely require an adequate flow in the river during, you know, the spawning run upstream or the subsequent migration of fingerlings downstream to the ocean. The temperature of the water is a factor. Salmon don't tolerate water hotter than 68 degrees, I'm told, which in shallow waters during the summer can, you know, be easily exceeded. And to cope with this, more water has to be released, preferably from deep reservoirs like Shasta. And, you know, when entering the river, it becomes much colder, and it brings that temperature down. So if you care about salmon, a lot of this makes sense. But during the drought years, it comes at a cost of many of, you know, California farmers. Over the past few decades, especially over the past few years, withdrawals from the rivers and the, you know, for irrigation were increasingly limited for environmental reasons. Farmers were forced to pump groundwater. And the resultant overdraft was compounded by the fact that using river water for flood irrigation in many cases was used to replenish those same aquifers. See the problem? So what frustrates many California farmers is the wisdom that they've acquired over the generations. It seems to be dismissed as folklore by experts. That's a big problem. You know, hired by environmentalists, activists that inform legislators and regulators of all of these folkloric things, but farmers in California have never wasted water. That's a fact. They know when the ground is thirsty, and they're able to percolate floodwater into irrigation situations to recharge Jennifer's aquifers. Where did I get that? I mean, I've said it a million times on this program. The greatest conservationists on the planet are California farmers. They can do more with less every year. It's remarkable. So people in, you know, orchards understand that water saving, you know, is a big benefit of drip irrigation, but also understand that each year in most cases there is a moment when a, you know, half foot of flood irrigation will percolate to the aquifers and flush away accumulated salts and eliminate gophers, for example, and saturate the earth for a winter cover crop. So, hooray for the California farmers, the family farmers, who have watched the rivers naturally rise and fall for countless seasons. And they also know that in the dry years, the salmon don't run. The salmon instinctively sense if the rivers and the streams are running dry, they stay in the ocean. And they wait for a wet enough year to make that final journey back to the spawning headwaters. Very smart, that little fish. So for, you know, an almond farmer in the San Joaquin Valley, these people, I mean, they use a lot of water, but again, they have to do so much more with so much less. And they're beginning to determine that somewhere in all of this, there's going to be a balance. So getting into that balance is complicated. I mean, you kind of have to be almost a Rhodes Scholar to get it. But one of the problems that we run into, and then I'll get to the point here, is striped bass. Striped bass have been eating salmon. For the long time, that was underplayed, then it was overplayed, and then, oh yeah, okay, that's the problem. Well, that's only one of the problems. Only one. The evidence that the striped bass eat salmon has probably been known by anglers ever since striped bass were introduced to California over a century ago, non-native. But the marine biologists have evidence for over 20 years that, yeah, that is one of the big problems that, you know, of the salmon family. They get eaten up before they grow up and have grandchildren and all that. I'm being a little weird now. So recent research has established that very few juvenile Chinook salmon survive the migration from their birthplace in the California Central Valley tributaries through the Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta, and then out to the Pacific Ocean. and records from the different traps on the Stanislaus and Tuolumne rivers show that most young salmon don't even make it as far as the San Joaquin River, still hundreds of miles away from the Golden Gate Bridge. So you got numerous elements contributing to the low survival of juvenile salmons, including the habitat alteration, pesticide pollution, and predation of a non-native fish. And that is one of the big problems. It's the predation of the non-native fish. It's really decisive how it's affecting the salmon populations. It ain't good. Now, more on this as to some of the real reasons why the salmon population is in trouble, without getting into a lot of the stuff that the leftists, the politicians, the environmentalists who make it up as they go along sometimes have been telling us for years. It's coming right up after we take a quick one here at KMJ, so stay put.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Get Ray Appleton. Subscribe to the Ray Appleton Podcast right now. It's free.
So getting to the point of the real reasons why salmon's population is on decline, it's two of the reasons that we've always known. Pollution from the Bay Area, and only the Bay Area can, you know, handle that and do something about it. The other is the striped bass. And the one solution with the striped bass, and I don't know why this has not been done, because it doesn't cost the taxpayers anything, anyhow, anyway. And the striped bass is really doing a number on the population. One might think the state would reconsider extending the season for striped bass, raising the limit on the size. You know, so you can grab any of them at any size. It would cost California taxpayers nothing. And if it didn't work, bass populations, you know, most adaptable and resilient species, I mean, they would rebound if there was a problem there. You know, if there was any danger of losing the striped bass. These things can, make their way through anything. And that's basically it. Now, that's not, you know, brain surgery, changing the laws when it comes to the striped bass. And why we don't do that is beyond me. I mean, some people will speculate it's to keep the farmers in check so they can keep blaming the farmers that they have got some role in the diminishing, you know, salmon population. Because therefore, if we do this with the striped bass, that could be considered a fix and more salmon might survive. And we don't want that as long as, you know, farmers are out there trying to do their thing. I don't know that it's that conspiratorial or that ugly, but I'm ready to believe like anything, you know? It's just, it just goes on and on and on. But after all of these years, I mean, it's just come down to those two things, the striped bass population and the pollution coming down from the Bay Area. And it's so funny because, you know, a lot of the activists, where do they come from? The Bay Area. And they're not, you know, willing to admit that their turf is part of the problem that's causing the, the diminishing salmon population to keep diminishing. There's some good English. Anyway. That's it. Now, we just haven't talked about that in a long time. And I'm glad to finally see some scientists come together, make up their mind and say, here are the two, you know, major, major, major reasons. Chinese spy balloons. Flipping from one to the other here. Now there's this, all, and this one has me confused about how many allegedly flew over the U.S. during the Trump administration and that were only discovered after Trump left the White House. What's that all about? U.S. intelligence officials reportedly say that several Chinese spy balloons, up to 10, floated over U.S. soil under former President Donald Trump, but went undetected at the time, and officials only discovered after Trump left the office that the balloons were for Chinese surveillance. Why? What would be the connection there? Trump leaving office and all of a sudden this is discovered? This news comes after the U.S. military used that F-22 Raptor to take out the Chinese spy balloon off the coast of South Carolina using a single air-to-air. It wasn't a Sidewinder, A-9X Sidewinder missile that was fired at an altitude of about 58,000 feet. And the decision to shoot down the spy balloon came after Joe Biden allowed it to fly miles and miles and miles over the continental U.S. during the last several days. But this story about Trump, you have to kick back and wonder, okay, is that just manufactured so they can pull Trump into this? And so he can say, hey, look at how stupid you were. 10 of them flew over while you were in the White House and you didn't even know. I mean, there's something very wrong with this story. So the claim that Chinese spy balloons flew over the U.S. soil under Trump generated a lot of pushback from the former president and from several of his top advisors, including John Ratcliffe, Director of National Intelligence John Bolton, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, National Security Advisor Rick Grinnell. Where's he been? I miss that guy. He did a lot of good stuff. He should be the governor of this state. He was the acting director of national intelligence, and Mark Esper, the secretary of defense. A lot of these individuals saying, no, that didn't happen. But we've got people from the Biden administration saying that it did. In a separate report, you got a senior Biden administration official saying U.S. intelligence, not the Biden administration, assesses that the PRC government surveillance balloons transited the continental U.S. briefly at least three times in the prior administration, and once that we had that knowledge, it was at the beginning of his administration, but never during any long duration of time. That's a quote. But why weren't any of these people who should have known about this, why didn't they know about it? That's what makes this story very flimsy. However, you got officials then noting that the previous administration did not know about these incursions and that they were only, here we go back again, discovered when Trump left office. Why? Quote, this information was discovered after the administration had left. It went undetected. Two things can be true at once. This happened and it wasn't detected. End quote. It's a brilliant statement if I ever heard one. So the official said that the discovery is part of a larger pattern about what Communist China is doing with its military and as they become more and more aggressive in their foreign policy. Quote, these balloons are all a part of the PRC fleet of balloons developed to conduct surveillance of operations which have also violated the sovereignty of other countries as well. That's coming from some official in the Biden administration. Senator Tom Cotton suggested that during an appearance on Fox News Sunday that there was the possibility that these balloons did fly over the U.S. under the Trump administration, but they were never discovered until recently. He's carrying that same banner. Quote, what's even more worrisome is, one, did our senior military know about these balloons in the past and not inform the civilian superiors during the Trump administration? Or maybe worst of all, did we not know about these balloons in the past and we only learned about them in retrospect by studying historical data? And that's where this whole thing about the Trump administration is left. So, I mean, we have to ask ourselves, is this something that is manufactured to make Trump look stupid? Because there is a lot of, stupid, if I want to call it that, a lot of people are trying to make Biden look stupid because of, he let this thing go on for on and on and on for quite some time. He had his reasons, but they were probably the wrong reasons. So because he's taking so much heat over that, all of a sudden come these stories about, 3, 4, up to 10, flew over the United States during the Trump administration and nobody knew anything. You follow me? That's being thrown out there to take some of the heat off the current president. And that's the kind of games that people are playing now. So that, you know, that kind of a fabrication, if indeed it is, that wouldn't surprise me at all. So there are a lot of people asking today about these stories, you know, during the Trump administration. And I think they're going to be forever hard to verify, you know, and they're just going to hang out there for what they are, stories at the moment. I, for one, really don't believe that all of that happened and that none of the officials that I just named knew. That would be impossible for all of them to be out of the loop. Right? Anyway.
This is the Ray Appleton Show on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page at KMJNow.com.
One of my favorite things to do during the Trump administration was to go back to Washington and attend the State of the Union speeches. I made it for three of them. One of them I was sick, but I got invited to all of them. And this is going to be just as fun tonight for different reasons. One thing that you need to look for this evening is here we go again. President Joe Biden is going to use this State of the Union speech, and this one's been really kept under wraps, to call for a new tax on billionaires with a B. I don't know what it is with the Democratic Party. They forever want to tax success. You make a lot of money. You've earned that money. We want more of it. Shame on you. So Biden is going to call on Congress to pass this legislation that would levy new taxes on the wealthiest people. Don't worry, it's only the wealthiest. And the White House is saying in a very, you know, lengthy information sheet discussing Biden's economic agenda as well as what to expect for Tuesday's much-anticipated speech, that's tonight. But the big one is this tax on billionaires. Quote, President Biden is a capitalist and believes that anybody should be able to become a millionaire or billionaire. He has, through nefarious... Yeah. He also believes that it's wrong for America to have a tax code that results in America's wealthiest households paying a lower rate than working families. The information sheet also claimed that billionaires pay an average tax rate of 8%. I think they'd have a harder than hell time proving that, you know. Still, you've got the wealthiest people in this country, and especially in this state, paying the bulk of all of the taxes. It's true. While the White House doesn't elaborate on the specifics about the proposed tax, you've got a previous proposal that was considered that would have, I guess you could say, it could alter the tax system by imposing a 23.8% annual tax on all the gains on billionaires' assets in a given year, including what they like to refer to as unrealized capital gains, which aren't, by the way, currently taxable. Can't do it. But it would also have applied to a small number of high earners who made more than $100 million annually. I mean, they're just not going to let anybody out of their crosshairs that's made a lot of money. So there would likely be a lot of legal challenges to this that would focus on whether a billionaire tax is an unconstitutional federal levy on property or a form of an income tax. You know, whether unrealized gains can be considered income, that's been the subject of debate among scholars for a long time. So this, I guess we can call it an agenda item, will be seen as largely aspirational, as it has virtually no chance of passing in the next 2 years, given the House is controlled by Republicans. And even some of the Democrats in the Senate, like Joe Manchin, are going to be very reluctant to support this type of thing. So during the State of the Union, tonight, Biden will also call for quadrupling the tax on corporate stock buybacks. That comes after a 1% excise tax on corporate buybacks was imposed as a part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which passed last year by the Congress. Quote, last year, oil and gas companies made record profits and invested very little in domestic production and to keep gas prices down. Instead, they bought their own stock, giving all the profit to their CEOs and shareholders, according to the White House. So whether they did or they didn't, that puts, you know, this president in the mood to punish. It's going to be interesting. Again, is it what he says or how he says it? There are going to be a lot of new faces. There are going to be a lot of, you know, new political dynamics as Joe Biden delivers this year's State of the Union address, coupled with the attention to some old problems brought back into painful focus by recent events, you know. The president tonight will stand there before a joint session of Congress for the first time since voters in the midterm elections handed him control, handed the control to the Republicans. Biden, like past presidents, will make the case that the nation is strong and that better days lie ahead, and he finds himself in some really choppy waters, as far as I'm concerned, as he passes the halfway mark of his term. So after a series of legislative victories during the first 2 years of the Biden's term, the Republicans are looking into doing some of his wins, taking them, the early wins, and undoing them. Recent mass shootings and a police killing in Memphis, Tennessee, have brought some renewed focus to the issues of guns and gun violence, excessive police force, and, you know, on the foreign policy front, Biden faces a better than formidable task of keeping the Western alliance and the American electorate united behind Ukraine in its effort to repel the Russian ongoing invasion. That's going to be problematic, I think. He's also dealing with the fallout from the U.S. downing of that suspected spy balloon we just talked about. On top of all that, you got a special counsel investigating how classified information from Biden's days as vice president and senator ended up in his possession. Again, I mean, there are certain things that a vice president and a senator, in the way of classified information, cannot put their hands on. And I think that is going to be problematic for this guy down the road. Big time. Tara, you're on KMJ. What's up?
Hey, Ray, what's happening?
You are.
No, I'm sitting here chuckling because you didn't tie in the California wealth tax that they're trying to, the billionaire's tax, to follow you wherever you go.
I haven't gotten that far yet, but yeah, you can take that one and run with it.
Well, because, you know, they don't do everything. There is nothing that machine does that's isolated. It is all coordinated. So the fact that he's going to address it openly, it's coming out of California. All this stuff with Newsom, everything is, this is the test ground. And so what they were floating here is what he's trying to, just like the national takeover of the voting, it all starts here. And that wealth tax, it's so asinine that they're basically trying to make people slaves of the state. You know, even if you leave, we're still going to take your money in perpetuity, no cutoff.
Well, that's why, though, because people are leaving the state and they had to do something to counteract that.
Well,
I'm sure you figured that out.
Well, obviously, you know, it's like we're insolvent. That's the big lie. And then that our books are good, but you're bleeding people. You lost a congressional seat. And the fact that these people are paying the bulk of the taxes, 50%, at least 50% of the population here does not pay any taxes, because this is one of the biggest welfare states, not paying taxes. So the revenue that you're taking in is coming out of, and are you really going to bite the hand? Don't even get me started with the so-called social media companies that are intelligence, DARPA agencies.
Oh, yeah.
With this mask. But you're really going to cut into their money all over the world? I don't think so. Google is too powerful now. It, like I said, between it being a surveillance state and the money, because they're in bed with China, and giving all of our AI everything, this is what we're fighting. But you would think they're going to give you their money from all over the world at the rates that you want it? Then those are your biggest donors. It's like we got to wake up and know that they keep playing us. They control the narrative, but money doesn't touch money. And when those are your donors and those are the ones that are keeping you in power and keeping you stealing election after election, you're not going to bite their hands. So these little young bucks that are pushing these bills, just like the one, you know, the doctors getting in between our doctors, that one the judge laughed at him, said, this is ridiculous. You're stifling the First Amendment. You cannot get in between. So this is all coming out of this, I call it hashtag Calistupifornia. And people continue to follow for the garbage, but they're never going to do that. It's a gate that opens up. Who are they coming after? The middle class. They are trying to wipe us out with everything they're doing.
Got to take a break. Thank you. Good words, as always. This is KMJ. Steve Hilton coming up at 105 on the Ray Appleton program. comments on anything that we've spit out there so far. 490-5858, the toll-free number, the biggie, 800-776-5858. We shall return.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
This is the Ray Appleton Show.
Get Ray Appleton.
KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page.
I had no idea. I'm on the air. I'm sitting here, you know, just babbling, gaggling away into my cell phone. Oh, sorry about that. I will sit down now. I thought we were going to the top of the hour. I'm totally off today. I apologize. Anyway, here we go. This is ugly news. As we talk about what's happening tonight with the State of the Union address, the Bank of America CEO says his company, now this is released the day that the president's going to be giving his speech. He's telling us that his company is preparing for a potential U.S. debt default. I mean, that's freaking scary. This was in a conversation with CNN. The Bank of America CEO, Brian Moynihan, says his company is preparing for a possible U.S. debt default. Now, they're the second largest, I do believe, in the country. And they're reportedly preparing for the worst regarding the congressional conflict over the nation's debt ceiling. Now, I've mentioned that a couple of times today, whether it should be raised or not. But this fearless CEO making a statement like that about the congressional debate and specifically how that would impact, you know, corporate America, subsequently defaulting on the country's debt remains a very real possibility for some of these people who are in charge of such stuff is like Bank of America. And they can't disregard some of the stuff that they're seeing that looks very, very bad. In the first few months of the new year, the national debt has reached unprecedented levels. Bad news. Thus, that development has led to these debates on both sides of the political aisle as to whether or not the national debt ceiling should be increased before the summer months. But again, keep in mind, this guy comes out with this statement basically released to all of us. I think it was made yesterday or the day before, but I mean, it comes out, you know, across all of the news today, the day of the State of the Union address. So the CEO says the company is preparing for this possible debt default. What does that mean? That means something very scary. And I think maybe as a result, we might have more productive conversations between both political parties to avoid something like that. I would hope so. So the CEO of the Bank of America also said, we are prepared for this, not only in this country, but in other countries around the world. You hope it doesn't happen. You hope it never happens. But it's not hope. It's a strategy that you have to prepare for. Now, there's some expectation that President Joe Biden could address the debt ceiling debate during the State of the Union address tonight. I'm betting he will after a statement like this from the CEO of the Bank of America. Conversely, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who I don't think is the brightest, you know, bulb in the six-pack, has already expressed a warning over the nation's debt crisis, noting that the possible default could happen as soon as June if the ceiling is not raised. Oy! I mean, that is scary stuff. Very, very scary stuff. Will it be addressed tonight by Joe Biden? Probably not. If I were him, I wouldn't want to address that. Hey, kids, we might default on the debt. Now, tonight, you know, it's going to be the GOP House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, wielding the gavel. That's going to be interesting because for so long, we've been staring at you-know-who, right? And, you know, we got to watch the body of language between the two. You know, I'm talking about the body language between the two, how the Republican legislators treat Biden overall after some sharp GOP outbursts from the audience last year, if you recall. The president and the new speaker recently had what has been said to be kind of a productive sit-down, but they're at an impasse over the borrowing limit. Here we go. So Republicans have refused to raise the statutory debt limit unless Biden accepts cuts in federal spending. And that's the way it's got to be. It's got to be. Biden has said raising the cap is not up for negotiation, and the Congress has got to pay for the nation's bills or the country is going to be facing an economic calamity. So you got the Democratic president last week said, you know, McCarthy made absolutely off-the-wall comments. That's his words, absolutely off-the-wall, to win the speakership. And Biden's rhetorical jabs might not be so sharp in the formal address, but look for him tonight to more subtly argue that there's an enormous chasm between how he and the Republicans approach the economy, health care, and Social Security. But how far will he go? Not really sure. Because a lot of this is going to open up a can of worms saying, well, Mr. Biden, that was your fault. Looking at the inflation and the like, the economic situation that we're currently in. Will the classified document probe come up tonight? I really doubt it. You know, I really doubt it. After criticizing his predecessor, Donald Trump, for holding on to classified documents in his presidency, Biden now finds himself in the middle of a special counsel inquiry into the classified documents that were found in his home and his former office space. So this probably could have been the target du jour had Biden not been caught with his hand in the cookie jar, too. So that will be eliminated tonight, I'm sure. And then there's the 2024 question. Many presidents during this particular cycle of State of the Union addresses will announce that they're running for a re-election. But there's growing sentiment across the voters that he should stick to one term, and that's basically within his own party. So is Biden going to readdress the re-election question tonight head on? Probably not. It's just going to be kind of a wait-and-see situation. Now, can I give you something? Would you mind if I gave you something? I forgot to do this yesterday, so we're going to do it twice before 2. I got more tickets for the big fight on March the 25th at the Save Mart Center. Richard Comey, former champion. Jose Ramirez, former champion. Which former champion will beat which former champion? We know which former champion will beat which former champion. These fights of Jose's always sell out. So why not win a pair of tickets now on KMJ? I got them for you. 490-5858. That's the only number you can call, and I want you to be caller number 5. You got it? And we'll send you to the fights on March the 25th. Caller 5, 490-5858. That's it. Good luck.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins Podcast, wherever you listen.